You're back with Annie on 3CR Breakfast, and on the phone we've got filmmaker Alex Siddon, The Art of Incarceration, which was actually at the Melbourne Documentary Film Festival, I think, last year. Is that right, Alex?
Good morning. It was 2019, it was.
Oh, right, because I remember watching it, and I was very, I mean, it left a very strong impression on me. So when I watched it again, I picked up more and more things. For listeners, The Art of Incarceration has been picked up by Netflix, and you have the opportunity to go there and watch it, which is a great thing that this should be getting a worldwide audience, isn't it?
Yeah, thank you. It is pretty incredible, a bit unexpected. Not because we didn't, believe in ourselves, the film, but it was, very humble production. So, a little bit surprised, pleasantly surprised, but it's amazing. And Netflix have actually been really awesome, wanting the film to do really well. So that's cool as well.
You say it's a humble film, but, we see through the eyes of Indigenous prisoners at Victoria's Fulham Correctional Centre, right? Now, that's actually not an easy thing to do. So how did this project come about?
Well, thank you. It came about, I just started making short films, just documentaries about people I'd met, asked Mr. Boyd to have any visions of it, and then I sort of wanted to do a feature, and I became very interested in this issue and this absolute, humanitarian crisis surrounding Indigenous incarceration about, 2015-ish, and thinking there wasn't much film or, documentary or literature or whatever around it. And then soon after, I met Robbie Warramanda, who had recently been released from a prison sentence, and is quite a striking and hulking presence himself, former super heavyweight world champion fighter and 160 kilos of tribal tattoos etched across his neck and hands. And I struck up a friendship with him, and he went on to become one of my best friends and a father figure and a mentor. And we spoke about the project, and he'd been doing art inside prison through the Torch program. So that pushed us in the direction of this film being a possibility. And then I was given permission through a very long process to go into Fulham and speak to the inmates. And it was there that I met Christopher Austin, who was the elder in the unit and one of the other lead subjects. And the screws took me up to him, and I walked through the whole prison, which was a pretty hardcore experience. And I got there, and Chris told me to have a seat, and we had a bit of a yarn, and he was really supportive of the film and the boys getting to tell their stories. And he then called in, 30 prisoners, and I spoke to the group, and then we organised the screening of some other films just so they could get a feel for who I was and what my work was like. And it really happened from there, to be honest. So I suppose, to answer your question succinctly, it was really about friendships, friendships and amazing connections and mutual respect and desire to connect and tell this story.
Yeah, and it comes across that way because I was really taken by, look at the statistics. You actually start the film off with that 3% of the population is actually Indigenous Australian, but they account for 27% of adult prison population, and Indigenous youth 55% of young people in detention. And that takes us back to something that really came out to me, which was that because there's a whole generation of Indigenous male children who have been incarcerated for being unruly children. And basically, and then left with a long trek into prison, without any skills for supporting themselves.
Absolutely, yeah, you're absolutely
shocking.
Right. I mean, it's harrowing, and the stories I would hear only reinforce not only the injustice but the absolutely brutal reality and the institutionalization, which we're alluding to. You really do see that. I feel, from what I observed and what I was told firsthand, the inmates lose their confidence, their ability to participate in society and feel like a contributing member of that society upon release. So it's a bit of a game. They, commit offence and come back, and in prison they've got somewhat of a community and somewhat of a structure, and as brutal as it is, you know, through their pure strength, they can survive in there more so than what is perceived on the outside. So it's just that tragic perpetual cycle. And through the subject of Chris Austin, who is another great friend of mine, we really do see the breaking of that cycle. Chris had been in the system, he had just turned 12, and he was sent to Parkville for being uncontrollable.
Yeah, in inverted commas, it's called uncontrollable. It's
that's right. Yeah. I remember when he told me that, and it was just a bit of a pause, and I obviously didn't want to offend him, and it was obviously, yeah, you know, I just met him, and I was in his cell, and there weren't many screws around. It was pretty intense, and I was sort of, could you elaborate on that, sort of uncontrollable? Because, you know, being a non-Indigenous man myself, I was like, you know, how can you be locked up for being uncontrollable?
Uncontrollable, he, yeah.
He just said, if you went to court once or twice, that was the term that put you in there, made you ward of the state for being uncontrollable.
Yeah.
And I mean, wow. And that's common of his generation as well. And he ended up serving, you know, I think it was 37 years. The longest he spent on the outside, 9 months, from the age of 12 to 38, I think it was. Or 48, sorry. 12 to 48. The longest was 9 months in society. So how can the system be working or productive or intuitive to growth if, you know, that's the numbers that have been presented through, you know, through Chris's life story? It's tragic.
Yeah, it is tragic and common. That's the worst of it. I mean, it's calculated.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, it really was common for a lot of the artists in there, because they're, you know, obviously a lot of participating in the program, to have been to Parkville or Malmesbury or another youth detention, you know, maybe New South Wales or wherever they may have been. So I think it was actually very common. I think there was only a couple of the boys in there who I spoke to who hadn't been to juvie. So, I mean, that's a harrowing story, and there needs to be so much more done for young offenders. And especially when you hear their stories and there's all those, you know, common variables of unstable housing, you know, lack of mentorship, guidance.
Yeah.
You know, minor offences. Minor offences, then jail time, institutionalisation, and then the offences grow. And they grow. And it's not good for the society, and it's not good for the individual, and it's something that we need to change. And, you know, I hope this story, in a small way or maybe even a big way, can push that momentum and that energy and that perception forward.
There's a quote, Christopher is attempting to forge a better future, and this is his quote: "In the past, I was a crook, you know, a jailbird, but now I'm an artist. My daughter is so proud of that. I never used to think of myself that way." It's just so, just says it all, really, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. I remember Christopher, one of the first times I spoke to him, he spoke about doing art for the first time in the unit, you know, obviously facilitated by the Torch and their amazing work. And he was saying that he felt uncomfortable when people were saying that they liked his art. And I was like, well, what do you mean? I was pretty confused. I didn't know what he was trying to say. He was saying, oh, you know, when people say they like your art and that, it's a bit weird, you know. I was like, what do you mean? And now we joke about it. He was really saying that he felt awkward getting a compliment.
That's right.
You know, getting some encouragement.
Yeah.
Because he'd never experienced anything through his life. And I thought, you know, if you compare that to my own white existence, of being educated and the other side of the spectrum of fortune, I just could not believe that. And we laugh about it now, you know, in good grace and good taste. And, but yeah, I think that says it all. Yeah.
There was another point in that film that where the fellow almost cried. But he was talking about being part of mob, about going, like you were saying, when people go to jail, then they become a mob. But he was dislocated from his mob, and that's so profound.
Yeah, that's right. He was also from up north, and all of those boys were Victorian. And I think he was saying that he felt a bit of that community vibe and that community sort of structure or microcosm within the art room in Fulham, because it does have a big art room. And there was the confined exhibition, obviously ran annually by the Torch, and all the artists were building towards that. So there was that feeling of being part of a team and being part of something and actually achieving a bit of purpose And, you know, he's as tough as nails, Joseph. I can guarantee that. But, you know, it made him shed a tear, that feeling of being a part of something. So it just shows that, I mean, whilst incarcerated, they don't want to be pushed to the corner and, you know, made even more angry or bitter than what they were. They want to grow and they want to be conducive to becoming something greater. You know, the inmates do. I saw that firsthand. So we need to enable that. And if we don't, then it's just a broken system.
Yeah, yeah. Now, this film was... You collaborated making this film, not just with the subjects, but, I mean, and, there's some happy grooves in this, but there's also some very sad grooves in this film.
Yeah.
Tell us about the collaboration with the writers, the other people who helped you.
Yeah, no worries. So, yeah, it was a massive collaboration and it was always going to be that from the start. So I wrote the film with Robbie Warramander and Christopher Austin, the two subjects. So, yeah, once we finished the film, throughout the whole journey, we were sort of, there was no dialogue about what we would talk about on camera and making sure everyone was comfortable. And there was always that respect and I knew where I stood and they knew where they stood and really strong relationships formed. And then, once we shot the film, we wrote the narration, which Uncle Jack Charles narrated. He did an outstanding job. And, it was amazing. You know, like I would be on the actual keyboard writing it mostly, but I'd get Chris and Robbie on the phone and we'd work out how to best say things. Like there's a quote in the intro. It used to be a bit further down the film, but in the Netflix cut, it's Art Remains is one of the purest and most accessible ways for our people to connect with culture. Those inside did not let the prison walls dull their creativity. And I wrote that with Chris Austin. And, so it was amazing. And Robbie was a co-producer. He was a writer. He was everything on the outside. And Christopher was enabled it on the inside. He organized for people to be interviewed. He helped people get confidence. He brought people together. So on both sides of the camera, we made the film and it was a collaboration between Indigenous and non-Indigenous artists, filmmakers and friends, really. And that's one of the, you know, truest ways I can probably explain what this massive journey was.
The music as well.
Yeah, Theo McMahon, big shout-out, one of my best friends, Bunjalong. And his brother's also an incredible person. He's the 13th ever architect, Indigenous architect. They're amazing brothers. Theo did an amazing job. It was his first ever score. He used a lot of different instruments. He made some very amazing sounds. The soundscape's massive. And he also got some additional guitar work from George Farrah, one of my other best mates, who Theo sort of directed and got that ambient guitar in. But, yeah, it's got a lot of music for a documentary. And, the music came out really, really dope. And everyone across the park just smashed it and we all came together and we were all at my house last Sunday celebrating the release together, which was lovely as well.
Yeah, that's really nice. And, of course, have the Fulham Correctional Centre boys seen it?
That's a good point. So we got an email, which was really nice to hear from someone fairly high up there saying they were going to organise a screening.
Mm.
The artists who we have got hold of have all seen it. Some of them we actually haven't. People don't know where they are. And,
yep.
Yeah, Chris Austin's just told me that's the reality of it sometimes. The current Fulham crew in there haven't seen it, but we're organising that. And we aim to screen it in every prison in Victoria and even every prison in Australia, really, if they're interested. Anyone who's interested, we want to show it inside prison because that's one of the most important things, to show that, yeah, obviously, there is tragedy and, yeah, you can come out and, you know, you can not survive, but you can also survive and you can achieve things that you think was possible. I saw that firsthand through Robbie Romander and Christopher Austin, and it's incredible what they've achieved and how we caught it on camera. And we did it all with a borrowed camera. We didn't even have our own camera and a shared vision. So, to anyone inside, we aim to show this film as soon as we can. We're organising it as we speak.
Yeah, yeah, good stuff. You're a self-taught filmmaker as well, so there you go.
Yeah.
Get up, stand up, and turn up.
That's it. Yeah, I was self-taught filmmaker, and I mean, I've been surrounded by amazing people, amazing artists like Robbie Waramanda, who just believed in me. He always believed in me. You know, as stern as he is, he's taught me so much about art and about visualization and about self-belief. He told me the first time I go into prison and speak to the inmates is the first time the fighter walks into the ring and looks their opponent in the eyes. He got me mentally prepared the whole time. But yeah, that's true. I'm a self-taught filmmaker. I've been blessed to have made my first feature with people who I love and care about so much. I'm almost worried about making another film because the friendships are so strong here, you know. But it's all love. And Robbie was on ABC actually, you know, talking about how he's a filmmaker. So I think he's the next big thing. But it's all good.
Yeah. So The Art of Incarceration on Netflix. And Alex Siddon, thanks very much for talking to us. And more strength to your arm.
Thank you so much. And much respect to you guys and all the amazing work you do. And thank you so much for having me on this morning.